Kerrang Radio Studio. There are assembled two phenomenal geeks with the power to communicate, review movies and television, bring you the news, and say things funny. Streaming to the internet at the speed of light, 96 KBS. For the next 2 hours, the super host, Anime with the power of knowledge, Dave with a unique perspective, and their core mission to right that which is wrong, educate the ignorant, and say things funny. You can follow the show on MySpace/GeekWorld. Begin.
You're listening to Geek World on 92.5 KYHY. We are your superhero, superhost, Anime, and Dave, bringing you the best in the world of geek. Don't forget, if you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to geekworldradio@yahoo.com. Check out our MySpace page, myspace.com/geekworld. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/geekworld. That one actually stays updated.
Yes.
Check out our website, geekworldradio.com. We have so many ways to, like, you know, find us.
I know, it's crazy.
And
we're
yet,
everywhere.
Like, none of them are updated. But you know what? You know what's exciting?
I have an idea, but I'm going to let you.
You're so loud.
Sorry, I'm just so excited about this. I'll just.
You'll have to be loud farther from the mic.
Step away from the mic a little bit. Yeah, I'm very excited. Sorry.
We are actually getting our podcasting ready. And by the time this show airs, there might actually be our best and worst of 2009 show might actually be up for podcasting.
Yes.
And if you're lucky, maybe even our Steven Seagal retrospective.
The mighty, mighty ponytailed master, Steven Seagal. Yes, that would be excellent. Yeah,
I'm so cool.
Very excited. You know, there's brand new things called podcasts no one's ever heard of, so I hope they pick up. Yeah.
Well, it's kind of nice because, you know, this is an actual radio show that then will also be podcasted rather than here I am in grandma's basement.
Exactly, yeah. Mom, shut up. I'm trying to record this radio show. Yeah, exactly.
And can you bring me down some cheesy booze?
Yeah, got any cheesy booze? Maybe a Pop-Tart? Fantastic. We should actually bring our mothers here so they could, you know, make us Pop-Tarts and cheesy booze. Or at least, you know, bring us cheesy booze.
My mom bakes.
That's true.
That would be even better.
Could she bake like one of those, like those little pizza squares, you know?
It's not baking.
Well, you have to put it in the oven.
You don't
it's
want
like
what, don't you want cookies?
Oh, in that case.
I mean I think we could probably trust your mom to make us pizza bagels or something.
That's true. Let's get your mother in here and she can make some cookies.
Your mom can put together some pizza bagels.
I do like pizza bagels. There's nothing wrong with that, you know. Don't be talking smack about the pizza bagels.
Okay.
Because they're excellent.
So let's go on. Today, most of our show is actually going to be on some of the movies that we missed in 2009.
Yes.
Some of them we even brought up in our 2009 retrospective, having said that, you know, we hear they were good or not good.
I would say that this show is entitled the Movies We Should Have and Should Have Not Seen from 2009.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we're actually going to start off with some news.
Yes. You know, by the time you hear this, you know, you'll have known pretty much most of the story and beyond. But the biggest news of right now is the fact that, Sam Raimi is not directing Spider-Man 4. Tobey Maguire will not be starring in Spider-Man 4. And in actuality, Sony's not even really doing a Spider-Man 4. Instead, they will be rebooting the franchise. Yes, you know, we've been talking about for a while the fact that, you know, there's been rumors that Raimi and Sony were not seen eye to eye on how they wanted to do the fourth movie.
In other words, Sony said, but Spider-Man 3, and Raimi said, yeah, but Spider-Man 3.
Exactly. It seemed pretty clear that Raimi was not happy about all the feedback, which he shouldn't be because everyone really hated that movie.
And then he made Drag Me to Hell, which made him remember that, oh, yeah, I could make my own movies and people will love them.
Yeah, and that I'm awesome when, you know.
I'm
Sony
awesome when studios aren't idiots.
Yeah, and they're not, you know. Yeah, basically. And, you know, it just got to the point where apparently Sony wanted one thing and Raimi wanted the other, and they decided it would just be cheaper and easier to reboot the whole franchise.
I mean, I hope that every director has the same reaction as Cameron of, I don't want your sloppy seconds.
Yeah, basically, you know, Sony's already, you know, already come out with a short list of the possibilities of who they want to direct the movie. I mean, it's
you know what they're going to end up with, though? They're going to end up with the Friday Night Lights guy. What's his name? The one who was going to remake Dune or whatever.
Berg.
Yeah.
Peter Berg.
You know, on the one hand, I don't mind him, but like, you know, that's the kind of person they're going to go with. And that's not who you go with for a superhero movie.
Well, I just think it's really sad. You know, I think that you know, this is bound to happen. This always happens to franchises. You know, a perfect example is Batman, the original Batman franchise. You know, by the time the fourth movie happened, it was just a mess. There was, like, so many villains and so many heroes, and it was just a great big studio mess, all led by Joel Schumacher.
And on the other hand, you know, another way to look at it is it's kind of like X3, where the studio thought, hey, we can just go with this jerk to make the movie, and no one will care.
Director.
No one will know the difference between this guy and a Bryan Singer making an X-Men movie. They won't be able to tell the difference.
And like, unfortunately,
for in that case, you know, Bryan Singer went on to make Superman Returns, which was just a mess in itself. But you know what was an even bigger mess than that? X3.
Well, exactly. And you know, the thing is, you know, at the end of the day, making movies is a business, and you know, the money people they're gonna be the ones with really the final say. And I have to say, I have to commend Raimi for, you know, basically not acquiescing to, you know, basically to completely destroying his career.
Yeah.
I mean, one of my best friends, this guy's loved Raimi ever since Darkman, ever since Evil Dead.
Yeah.
And after Spider-Man 3, he totally was not on the Raimi bandwagon anymore. He really didn't care about anything else he made.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal, because Raimi is like a big cult director and a very talented director at that. And, you know, I think that...
Raimi... I mean, where's Bruce Campbell going to get a job?
Exactly.
I mean, if Burn
Come
Notice
on.
Goes off the air, he's gotten, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
really.
Raimi's the whole reason that Bruce Campbell exists as an actor.
Come on, Sony. With great power comes great responsibility. How could you do this to Bruce Campbell? And, you know.
You learned nothing from these movies?
And, you know, I also have to say, you know, I think it's, you know, I think it, what it seems like that's clear is that, you know, Raimi wanted, like, one villain or two villains. And, you know, and the studio wanted, you know, they probably wanted, like, the Sinister Six or something.
Yeah, well, the thing is, Raimi had an idea for, what was it, the Vulture or something like that. Like, he had this idea for maybe one villain, maybe a little bit of somebody else or something.
The Black Cat,
but,
probably.
No, I'm pretty sure he just wanted the one villain and maybe something else. And the studio said, okay, but you also have to put in this villain, and this other love interest.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Well, you know.
Why? Why? Did you not notice how badly that worked in the last movie?
Yeah, well.
How you can't split everything between a million villains?
Yeah. Well, because they're not looking at, you know, people, you know, commending the film. They're looking for how many Happy Meals can we sell? How many toys can we sell?
Did you not notice Iron Man and how well that did?
Yeah.
And that's the other thing. Like, the whole thing is, oh, we need young and stuff. It's like, Iron Man. Like, I defer to Iron Man. And even the Hulk movie, the new Incredible Hulk movie, you know?
Well,
I mean...
Yeah, I mean, we haven't really gotten into that yet, but I think the main thing is, I think it's clear that that not only do they think that it's cheaper, you know, not to pay these people, but to reboot it. Yes, I think right now, you know, they're looking at Twilight. They're looking at, you know, these tween audiences and going, it's just better off to make a movie for the kids because everything's young right now, and that's what's in. And Miley Cyrus is even still kind of popular.
Then stick with your cartoons, you know? Stick with Superhero Squad or whatever.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, really, it's just...
disrespectful
to everybody.
It's going to
do well no matter what because it's Spider-Man, but I think that, you know,
it's so upsetting because so many superhero movies have recently, like, you know, brought kind of like a respectability to it, you know, and said that we are going to be real movies. And essentially what Sony is saying is screw that. We just want to make a popcorn flick.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you can't do that now. You can't have all these movies surrounding you. You can't be in a world with The Dark Knight and then pull the Spider-Man franchise away from Raimi.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just stupid.
And, you know, I'm sure people will cite, you know, the Hulk and the Incredible Hulk, but the problem with Ron Lee's Hulk is it was terrible.
Yeah,
it was
everything
really bad,
about it was terrible.
And, you know, though they tried to use the scapegoat of internet downloads, the movie, no one wanted to see it again because it was horrible. It was way too long.
No one wanted
really
to see it the
good.
First time because it was horrible.
So they made Incredible Hulk and everyone was happy because it should have been remade.
People might have been unhappy with Spider-Man 3, but they weren't unhappy with the development of Spider-Man in 1 and 2.
Yeah, and I think that I think unfortunately Sam Raimi took a lot of flack for it, but I'm sorry.
It wasn't him.
I can't, you know, I really can't blame him for this because, you know, it's not like a McG Terminator Salvation thing which was McG's one chance to really prove himself and he just failed miserably. Sam Raimi has been hitting home runs for a long time in his career.
And even though Spider-Man 3 was bad, it still brought in the money because Sam Raimi did as well as he could with it.
And, you know, there was, you know, he's been very adamant, you know, there were reports even before Spider-Man 3 came out that he wanted to split it into two movies because it was just too much. And he didn't like the Venom character, and he didn't want anything to do with adding that character, which, by the way, was the worst part of that movie, was
yeah.
putting Venom in, because it was clear
totally worthless in there.
It was clear he didn't like the character that much, but, you know, they just keep on pushing because, you know, it's all about making money.
It's one thing if you want to do the Venom character as a totally separate movie with no other villains,
yeah.
because that's what that one needs, you know? That is an emotional and, like you know, a psychological character,
yeah.
but you can't have it in the same, like, the same kind of space as...
Yeah.
as any other villain.
And he was such an afterthought, too. He just kind of showed up at the end after, like, you know, I mean, poor, what, Topher Grace is his name?
Yeah.
You know, that guy, I feel bad for him, too, just because, like, it was not a good decision to hire him for that, because it just, I get that.
Then again, at least they gave him a job.
Yes, true. But I know they were trying to do the evil Peter Parker, but it just, it was so far away from what it was like in the comic books, and yeah, it wasn't a very good idea. So, with that, you know, Sam Raimi basically told Sony, and what Sony's saying is Sam Raimi said, I can't make the movie for the release date of, you know, 2011 during the summer and keep the film's creative integrity, which means that I can't make this movie with what you people want because you people don't care about making anything that's decent.
Yeah, you don't care about quality.
Yeah.
You just care about Happy Meals.
And now, apparently, according to Entertainment Weekly, they're saying that, you know, basically Sony kind of predicted that they were either going to do Spider-Man 4 or reboot it anyway. And so they had both films kind of being in production at the same time, where they had James Vanderbilt, who wrote Zodiac, you know, write this script for a reboot. So they had already kind of planned on maybe doing this, apparently. I don't know if Sam Raimi knew this or Tobey Maguire, but yeah, it's
seriously
the deed is done. In 2012, mm-hmm. the summer 2012, we will see a 3D reboot of Spider-Man.
I like anything going to 3D. I mean,
yeah.
I appreciate 3D, and,
yeah.
and web-slinging, flying 3D could be pretty cool.
I mean, you know, I don't know really what to say, you know, because, you know, we've become used to characters being rebuilt in character, in, you know, different people playing different characters. For instance, James Bond, you know, though they're all different stories, you know, he's always changed and stuff. So I don't really think it's that. I think it's more just like, It feels strange when you have all these established actors. And, you know, I think,
yeah.
you know, you look at Tobey Maguire and everyone knows him as Spider-Man now, but I remember before Spider-Man, you know, this guy had done, you know, quite a few pieces that were really good. You know, Cider House Rules, for one, Wonder Boys, for one. This guy was an established, really good young actor when they picked him for Peter Parker. And it was one of those times where they picked an actor over an action star.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I thought that he was phenomenal as Peter Parker. I thought he was very, very good. And I think that, you know, though people now cite Spider-Man 3 with the whole, like, dance scene, you know, that I don't know where that came from. You know, the guy was a good choice for Peter Parker. I think we more disliked Kirsten Dunst of anyone else
yeah.
in those movies.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of like, it's going to be interesting for them to try to find somebody of kind of equal caliber, unless all they care about is making that Twilight money where they can just, you know, pick any, you know, British supermodel they can find.
The problem is that Twilight is as popular as it was because the books did really well.
Yeah.
It wasn't about the actors. It became about the actors afterwards.
Right.
You know, I mean, Robert Pattinson was the hot young kid from the Harry Potter movie.
Right.
You know,
totally.
Like, and so that became what it was, but it was going to be huge because the books became this phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Spider-Man is a phenomenon with geeks.
Totally.
But if you're going to show this kind of disrespect to your geek audience and pretty much tell, you know, a geek favorite of Sam Raimi that, oh, yeah, your ideas are stupid. And if you don't do what we say, then we don't want you.
Yeah.
Like, really? You don't trust this guy? Like,
well,
I mean,
I look at it this way. You know, it's a positive for Sam Raimi because, you know,
he's not trapped with it anymore.
He looks, well, yeah, but he also looks like that he's sticking to his guns and he understands that people are upset with him about
yeah.
Spider-Man 3. But it also looks bad on Sony because it looks like that that they're totally fine with Spider-Man 3 keeping that the status quo.
Yeah.
And that they're not really going to care about quality as
yeah.
much as pumping out movies to make money. And you know what? I mean, people...
I just
respond to that in
yeah,
it's a very
really,
negative way.
I appreciate right now people are totally appreciating good movies. You know,
yeah.
they're also, you know, that yes, they also went to see Twilight and stuff, but they didn't go a second time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the fact that Avatar is doing so well says so much. And, you know, like, we might have gotten all up on it because of the previews, but, you know, we were always willing to say that these previews are terrible, but we're willing to wait it out and see what the movie is. And when we did, we were like, heck yeah, this is everything we could have wanted.
Phenomenal.
You know?
Yeah,
like,
totally
good
movie.
But we don't want someone to screw with our lore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We, like, you can't take a character and then just, you know, oh, we're going to call him Spider-Man, but you know, we're going to do something else with him, you know? Like, I don't know. I can't imagine how they're going to reboot it. And at that, I mean, if they do reboot it, I don't want them to go immediately with the Mary Jane character.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I'd like to see Gwen Stacy.
You should.
You know,
yes.
I'd like to, if they're going to take him back to high school, then take him back to high school.
Yeah.
And don't make it so that, you know, Peter Parker has had one girlfriend in his life.
I know. It's kind of lame, isn't it?
Really lame.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, granted, he was supposed to be kind of dorky. You know, he is. Peter Parker's a little bit of a dork, but like, he still has a history.
Yeah.
And fine, you know, these last ones, you know, because it was actually more of a Spider-Man, not mm-hmm. Spider-Boy.
Yeah.
You know, and granted, in the comics, he may have been a kind of perpetual teenager,
mm-hmm.
but he still was, you know, an adult.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm so worried about what they're going to do with it.
Well, I think, you know, I still think that, you know, Sony didn't want to pay Toby $30 million, didn't want to pay Sam whatever the amount he makes, and they were just like, you know, it's our property, we can do whatever we want, you know, screw you. And I think that's kind of what it came down to. And, you know, Sam, you know, Sam's a good Hollywood businessman, so, you know, he wrote that I think they're going to do a great job, and I'm excited for what they're doing. You know, he wasn't airing out dirty laundry at all because he's a professional. I just think that it's going to be really interesting to see. Now, granted, you know, like I said, James Vanderbilt wrote this script, and he's a really good script writer. I mean, Zodiac was a fantastic movie. Granted, it was a David Fincher movie, which, you know, David Fincher pretty much always knocks out of the park, with exception of, like, Alien 3, which he disowned. So, you know, I think, in that respect, I don't know how good the script actually is. But I think, you know, another sentiment that people are having is that, you know, Spider-Man 3, though good, I don't think is near the fan favorite of Spider-Man 2. And a big part of Spider-Man 3, you know, is the big origin story. And, you know, are people really going to want to sit through another hour-long origin story that we've seen not too long ago again?
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
But they have to. If they're going to reboot it, they can't not have the origin story.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't like, you know, putting the Joker in The Dark Knight where, you know, you don't give him a backstory. It's like, you know, it's like doing a Batman movie without showing, you know, his parents getting killed. You have to.
It's true.
And so, you know, people are just going to have to, like, sit through that again. And then our other fear is, you know, like, oh, let's get Taylor Lautner. Let's get somebody from Twilight.
Yeah, like, and they get someone really pretty. And that's, like, part of the thing that Tobey Maguire was so great. You know, he's kind of adorable, but he's also kind of weird looking.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
He's like, and he made, like, he's a dork. You can see him as a geek. You know, someone like Taylor Lautner, like, that kid, he's just a pretty little kid, you know? There's no way to ugly him up. You could give him the dorkiest glasses and, like, fake acne, and he would still look pretty.
Yeah, you can't do the she's all that with Spider-Man. You can't, like, Robert Pattinson with goofy glasses and be like, see? He's ugly.
Yeah.
It's like, come on, really? Like, they can't get away with that. Yeah.
It's like, that's like putting thick glasses on Brad Pitt, you know?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. The point of Spider-Man is it's the ultimate, like, you know, geeky guy fantasy. It's the scientist guy who gets, you know, beaten up by the football players, who's like, you know, the girl of his dreams, doesn't pay attention to him, who gets these superpowers and, you know, becomes, you know, like
a great,
exactly. And that's the thing. That's why Tobey Maguire was so perfect, is because he looks like that dorky guy.
Yeah.
And you just, like, implore Sony, you really just don't hire someone who's, like, basically a supermodel, you know, because it's not going to work out well.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
But apparently Sony came out with this you know, short list of directors they're looking at to possibly direct the movie.
So who do they
first think? Off is James Cameron,
thank you, James Cameron, for immediately saying, I don't want your sloppy seconds.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, I mean, because that just put the smack down on him. That said, like when you have James Cameron pretty much just going after you like that, I mean, you turn and you go, oh, maybe we made a bad decision.
Yeah. I got this from superhero hype that came off MTV, and they asked James Cameron about it, and I quote, no, it's a little bit sloppy seconds. Let's face it, I haven't gotten a phone call. I don't expect to, certainly not after this interview. But if you're thinking about it, it's sloppy seconds. I'm not interested.
Yeah, yeah. See, like, that's him telling every other director with any sort of respectability to do the exact same thing and say, you know, because, I mean, that's the thing. James Cameron, you know, what we're finding out more and more, especially learning about Avatar, is that he is 100% geek.
Totally.
And he has such a geek respect at that. And that he, I don't think he wants to see, you know, Spider-Man, like, flipped around and screwed with anyway either.
No,
you know,
totally.
Like, you know, he has a respect for that kind of thing. And I think he has a respect for Raimi, too.
Yeah. And also, you know, I mean, back in the you know, mid 90s, Cameron was actually considering doing a Spider-Man movie in the first place. And it never ended up happening. But I think it's a good thing. You know, I think Sam Raimi did a great job. And this is just very, very kind of strange, sad news. So the next person they have on the short list after James Cameron, which is a no way, is David Fincher.
That would just be weird.
Yeah, which I have to say, you know, I get where they're going with this with the whole, like, it's like Christopher Nolan for Batman, but...
No, it's not.
Well, no.
No, I get what you're saying, but I'm saying in response to what they're thinking.
Yeah, no way.
No, yeah, it's not.
Exactly. It's not the same.
Nolan was an unknown at the time, really.
He was practically an unknown who had done, like, these kind of more art house noirish films, and which really worked for Batman. David Fincher, like the director of Seven, Fight Club, and Benjamin Button, doesn't exactly sound like a good fit for
Spider-Man. And the other thing was that, you know, the reboot of Batman came like years and years after.
Yeah.
Not like 2 years after.
Exactly. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I have more respect for David Fincher. I mean, he's one of my favorite filmmakers.
Right.
And he actually directed Zodiac, written by James Vanderbilt, as I said. But, one, I don't think there's any way he'd do it in the first place unless he really needed the money. And two, I'm not sure if it would be a good idea.
And three, Spider-Man is not supposed to be as dark as the Dark Knight. Like, Batman in its origins was way darker than anyone really thinks of it as.
Yeah.
It's not the goofy TV show. It was the dark, dark comic when it first came out.
Totally, yeah.
You know?
I mean, they had to overhaul it after the first year because he's
tossing
criminals off rooftops.
The Dark Knight is actually kind of accurate for what Batman originally came out as.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So, you know...
Joker, too.
But, you know, Fincher for a dark thing, fine, maybe, but Spider-Man is supposed to be lighter. He goes in his mask and uses wacky one-liners. That's what he's always done.
And that's why they picked Sam Raimi, the guy who directed Army of Darkness, Evil Dead, Quick and the Dead, like, all of these, like, kind of, like, comical yet cool, stylish action
It's like,
films.
Have you ever heard Stan Lee talk? That's how he writes his characters.
Exactly. Do-gooders. Another person on the list is Wes Anderson, which I still don't get it. Well, Wes Anderson, he started off directing Bottle Rocket, and he's directed movies like Rushmore, and he directed...
So really, they're going,
Aquatic.
We're going to go art house, and it's going to be awesome, like the Dark Knight, because we have no respect for the character of Spider-Man, because it's just a comic book.
Well, yeah, well, now you're going to somebody who they think is more on the comedy side, which he is, but I've never seen anything from him that really visually makes me say, wow, he could direct Spider-Man. I haven't seen the Fantastic Mr. Fox, but even though apparently the movie's really good, the trailer drives me absolutely crazy.
That animation creeps me out so much.
Yeah.
Like,
you know,
I'm not saying that it's bad or that anything's wrong with it, it just creeps me out. I don't know if I can watch it, because it freaks me out.
And, you know, I think, you know, he's made some really funny movies. I just, I don't see why he would be on a list to direct Spider-Man, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, no, there's no good reason.
I mean, it would make more sense.
It's just the Nolan effect.
Yeah, it would make more sense to me to have someone like, you know, Pierre Morel, who directed, you know, like Taken, to be on the list, though he's doing Dune, which I'm very happy about, by the way.
Yeah, that actually seems like a really good...
But, you know, it's kind of bizarre to have him on there. The last person who, at least Ain't It Cool thinks might be the number one guy is Mark Webb, who directed 500 Days of Summer, which,
that's so weird.
Which we didn't see, so we really don't have an opinion on his work that much. You know, other than the fact that...
Does that mean that Joseph Gordon-Levitt is going to be the new Spider-Man?
Yeah, I know, right? Well, he certainly would fit that mold of good actor, but, I mean...
But they'll probably go, oh, but he's too old.
That's the thing. I mean, if they're you know, kind of saying that, well, Tobey Maguire's, you know, already 35 and we want to, you know, replace him, then they certainly wouldn't go with someone, you know, in their late 20s.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. They're probably going to go with somebody who either looks young in their mid-20s or somebody who's closer to that age.
Well, I'd like to give the studios something to think about for casting.
I agree. I think, and by the way, I know what your choice is, and I think it's fantastic.
I actually have come up with, if you're going to do, you know, if you're going to reboot it, if you're really, really going to go with this,
and
you're
going to so
reboot it,
choice.
And you are, yeah. I've got you a new Peter Parker, and I've got you a Gwen Stacy that I'm kind of, you know, thinking you might want to check out. So let's start off with Peter Parker.
Well, first let me go, anime does casting.
Okay, Peter Parker, Michael Angarano.
Yeah.
We're all about Michael Angarano, besides the fact that he's actually a pretty decent young actor.
Yeah, totally.
He also he's the kind of actor that really gets into parts and really learns everything he needs to for them.
Yeah.
I mean, like, he learned to, like, play piano or something for some role back when. He learned martial arts, and he learned to do it in a way that actually looks like he really knows martial arts when he did Forbidden Kingdom. He did it in a way that impressed Jackie Chan and Jet Li. I mean, that says something in itself. It also says that the kid can fight.
Yeah.
You know, the kid can move, you know. Yeah, of course, there's going to be a stunt double a lot of the time, but not all the time. And this kid can move well. He can, you know, he's a good little actor. And he's got that look that he's, you know, he's not a bad-looking kid, but he can go really to the dorky side.
Totally. You know, I think you're totally right. I think he's perpetually going to look young for quite a while.
I agree.
He's sort of looked the same ever since Sky High. And also, we were talking about him before because, you know, he was just cast in something else recently. I don't know off the top of my head, but, you know, he's gaining more and more popularity, and I think that what he sort of is the kind of like sort of like the non-douchey, like, you know, choice for like someone like Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah,
you know, it's like that's kind of the little, you know, part he's carving out for himself.
Yeah,
he can play those roles,
the nice guy
that Shia would play without coming off douchey.
Yeah, totally.
You know, and I think, you know, I'm also glad that he's really good and kind of popular in a way without being connected to the chick from Twilight.
Yeah.
Which apparently he was dating or is dating.
Apparently,
or whatever,
yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, I think I agree with you. I think, you know, I mean, Will Stronghold in Sky High is very much like Peter Parker.
Very much. And that's like, I mean, we talk about that movie all the time because it's just one we saw once and just loved it. It was so much fun.
But yeah, I mean, he is the like endearing guy that you can like, but you actually believe, you know, could grow and could become stronger. And I think he's a great choice.
Okay. And now Gwen Stacy.
Yeah. Because like you said, you know, the Mary Jane thing, it's like, especially if you're going to reboot it, there's no reason to have her first. I would believe that, you know, when they were making Spider-Man that, you know, they wanted Kirsten Dunst to be in it, so they decided to go with Mary Jane.
Although it would have made more sense to go with the blonde Gwen Stacy.
Yeah, well,
But they wanted to go with the Mary Jane character also because it was the better known,
exactly.
Because she lasts longer.
Exactly.
But, you know, Mary Jane is the one that eventually becomes a supermodel or something.
Yeah.
Now, going with the Gwen Stacy character, I vote for Amy Teagarden. Now, any of you listening probably don't know who she is, but she's on that show Friday Night Lights as the daughter of the coach.
Yes.
And she's actually a decent young actress. She's the right age, you know, for high school, too. And she's really cute.
Mm-hmm.
And height-wise, she kind of matches up with Angarano, you know. And the other thing is that she doesn't have to be that great because the character will die.
Yes.
She doesn't have to die at the end of the first movie,
wow.
But the character of Gwen Stacy dies. I mean,
that's true.
You know,
yeah.
We all that's part of, you know, like the death of Uncle Ben. That always affected him. That always affects Spider-Man,
well,
you know.
That's what really makes him Spider-Man in the first place.
It does. It does. But the reason that he then like doesn't feel like he can ever have any sort of relationship is because his first girlfriend dies.
True.
Dies. Like, because, you know, your uncle dies. Okay, like, the dude was old and, you know, he was your family, but that had nothing to do with you being Spider-Man, really. That just had to do with, like, an incident, you know?
Well, I think, you know, I mean,
or at least in the movie.
Point, I mean, the whole point was because he let that guy go, his Uncle Ben died.
No, but that's my point. That was what made him into Superman, not Superman, Spider-Man.
Yeah,
okay. You know, he then became Spider-Man because of it. It wasn't because he was Spider-Man that it happened.
Right, true.
Gwen Stacy was more because he's Spider-Man, Gwen Stacy is dead.
Yeah.
you know? And so that made the really emotional impact on what Spider-Man is.
Totally.
So then the relationship with Mary Jane became all that much more important.
I agree.
And so I think it's really important to have the Gwen Stacy character exist.
Yeah. Movies, and they love to, like, recast new female leads with the same actor in sequels anyway. Look at, for instance, sure. like I said, James Bond or, you know, Indiana Jones. So it wouldn't be it's like kind of a total studio move anyway, so might as well. I think it's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I agree with Amy Teagarden. I think she's a really good choice. It was one that I hadn't thought of either.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really good point.
Do you have anything more to say about this?
No, you know, honestly, I wasn't really able to come up with anyone. I'm glad you were. Pretty much because it's just sort of like, I was kind of hurt by the whole
yeah.
thing. Mostly because I was really hoping that Sam Raimi could kind of make up in the audience's eyes for Spider-Man 3, though I don't blame him for it still. He is the director. And so I was kind of hoping that, you know, he could have at least one last Spider-Man to kind of, like, showcase it. And also...
But you know what? Drag Me to Hell, like, for
yeah.
Raimi, like, that kind of pulled him out of Spider-Man and
but
said,
also,
hey, remember when Sam Raimi was, like, totally awesome with horror?
Yeah, but also I'm just, like, becoming very uncomfortable with rebooting stuff, like, a
I
year
agree.
After.
That's,
like,
yeah, I that is just, it's not right. It's, I mean, it was one thing, like we said with the Hulk, where no one actually saw it because it was so terrible.
Yeah, it's just sort of, I don't know, it's unseemly. It just
yeah.
feels like nothing... I don't know.
Yeah, I agree.
You know what I mean? I've
well, just
it.
Yeah, it's tough. But actually, we're going to take a quick break. So we'll be back with you very, very soon.
In a world of chaos and confusion, there are but two geeks who can clear everything up. Anna and Dave, Geek World, Thursdays at noon on 92.5 KYHY Burbank.
We're back. You're listening to Geek World on 92.5 KYHY. We are your superhero, super host anime, and Dave bringing you the best in the world of geek. Are you following us on Twitter? Twitter.com/geekworldradio. And keep on checking out our website at geekworldradio.com, because I'll really try and find
yes.
some way to let you know that the podcasts are up.
Yes.
Or well, just, you know, check out iTunes, because maybe you'll
yeah.
find Geek World,
we'll
the podcast.
Put a big image of an iPod right in the middle of...
Could
right
you get
middle.
Sued for that?
Probably. Why not?
Dang.
Let's go nuts. Want to go nuts?
Let's go nuts.
So, yes. So, as we said, that the topic of this show today is going to be the movies we should have and should have not seen from 2009.
That's right. Because
there's a lot of movies we didn't get to see. You know, for every, you know, fantastic movie like, I don't know.
Avatar. Oh, wait,
you know?
Were you actually going to say a fantastic movie, or
no,
were you going to be facetious?
Yeah, I was going to be facetious, but, you know.
Oh, wait, start again. I'll not talk this time.
No, that's okay. I was going to say, you know.
For every fantastic movie, like.
For anything like, you know, The Legend of Chun-Li, we weren't able to see something
yeah.
like The Inglourious Basterds, so.
For all the, you know, amazing movies like Dragon Ball.
Yes, exactly. So we watched four movies all together. Two of which are, you know, pretty critically acclaimed and pretty popular. Two of which, not so much.
And I think what the first two were on our best and worst in 2009, despite
yes.
having not seen them.
Yes.
We didn't need to
see
them.
Things, put them on a best of list.
Well, at
that's
least
for,
the,
that's
no,
for
no.
legitimate things, you know, like Entertainment Weekly.
Whatever.
And stuff.
Oh yeah, whatever.
Not for us. Yeah. Well, you know, enough people, you know, when our parents say it's good, clearly it's okay.
Anyways,
yeah.
So speaking of Inglourious Basterds, why don't we start with that?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, should we list off the four first, or should we just go
yes,
in order?
Yes, let's list off the
All
four.
Right. So the four movies that we saw in the good category.
Two in the good category.
Well, yeah, there's four, but two in the good category. Yeah, you're right. Whatever. And the two in the good category would be Quentin Tarantino's Inglourious Basterds. And Paranormal Activity,
uh-huh.
which the Blair Witch of our time, and of the bad category, limited released direct to DVD Mutant Chronicles, what can I say about this other than Jennifer's Body? That's really all I'm gonna say. I can't even come up with a subtitle for this one, except for the fact that it is, and I quote, freak-tarded.
Yeah, and the freak-tarded
yeah,
Jennifer's
yeah.
Body.
Which is, yeah, which of course is a quote from the film. I'm not brilliant enough to come up with something like
oh,
that.
Oh, who
not,
is?
No one. Just Diablo.
Yeah.
But first off, we will start with Inglourious Basterds.
Oh.
Which, you know, is certainly, I don't mind saying, is certainly the best of the films that we watched.
Okay, I'm going to start off by saying, last year when I saw the first preview for it, you know, it was kind of my similar reaction to Avatar, where I mostly because I didn't understand what Quentin was going for. I'm used to Quentin movies where there's all sorts of pop culture references, and it's things that take place in a certain time don't actually take place in that time.
And violence is always kind of funny.
Yeah,
and capricious.
And it felt like the first preview I saw, I was really confused because it seemed just offensive. The whole thing seemed like they were making fun of the Holocaust.
Pretty much. That's what the first trailer kind of seemed like.
And so I kind of went off on the trailer and I wasn't unwilling to see the movie, but I just didn't understand, you know, why people were saying good things about this thing that seemed to do nothing but make fun of the Holocaust.
Yeah.
But that didn't happen to be the case. That was not what this movie was about at all.
Not at all, yeah.
This, the movie of Inglourious Basterds is essentially a fairy tale in a way, a violent, violent fairy tale of the what if, you know... What if all of these like this mega team of good guy of crazy murderous good guys,
killer American Jews,
came in and saved the day and saved people from the Holocaust.
I believe Quentin Tarantino called this a Jewish revenge. Fantasy. Sorry,
I mean, the Jews are apparent are essentially Uma Thurman in Kill Bill.
Yeah, pretty much.
This totally not what I had expected from that first preview, and very glad I saw it, and very glad that I was willing to give it a chance in the first place.
Yeah, I think, it's one of those movies that people were a little unsure of, and then they saw it, and they loved it, and we wanted to see it in the theaters, we didn't get the chance, and, the one thing from the trailer was true is the one thing the movie really is about is killing Nazis.
Yeah.
And, I think that it's the highest grossing Quentin Tarantino movie since Pulp Fiction. And I also believe it's the highest grossing, at least the highest grossing open for a Brad Pitt movie that he stars in. And,
I'd like to, can I just give what this movie means?
Please.
Nazis are bad.
Yeah.
Nazis are evil. Mm. Americans are crazy.
Yeah, pretty much.
Especially freaking American awesome.
Jews, yes. I think, really the main thing to remember about this movie is it's a real movie.
Yes.
It's not sort of like... sometimes we kind of get mired with Quentin's kind of, this kind of fun, jovial stuff he does where, he always makes
Quentin
films.
Being Quentin.
But yeah, exactly. Stuff like, Kill Bill is a perfect example. It was more just sort of, let's get all this kind of kung fu anime stuff that I like and let's jam it all into one movie. And, it's not an important movie, but it was fun and it was awesome. And, like Jackie Brown, I want to show my love of blaxploitation flicks and Pam Grier,
right.
And really, Pulp Fiction was really his main movie that not only showed his love for film overall, including French New Wave cinema, amongst other things, the 70s films, but it was like a real movie.
Well, and even back in the, when he did Reservoir Dogs, which, essentially, when it comes down to it, was practically a student film. He wasn't a student, obviously, but like, it was low budget. It was...
It was, in a way, like you could call Evil Dead that.
Exactly.
In a way.
It was a student film in the Evil Dead kind of way.
Now, Quentin is probably one of the more successful high school dropouts of
all time, seriously.
I can confidently say, even before we review this movie, that this is definitely the best movie he's done since Pulp Fiction.
I was shocked. Like one of the greatest things about this for me was the maturity that Quentin showed in it.
Yeah.
I mean, with what this movie is, you wouldn't think that maturity would be the word that anyone would use to describe anything of it. But that's just it. It was a real movie. It didn't feel the need to make everyone speak in English and get all American actors.
Yeah.
It didn't feel the need to, there was no need to even have Brad Pitt be in it the entire time. I mean, like, he wasn't in it as much as you'd think he was.
No, it was very much an ensemble movie.
And he didn't feel the need to go over the edge in anything. Like, he didn't even do Quentin kind of things. I mean, he fast cut away from some of the violence in a way to make it feel almost less violent.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Does that
make sense?
Yes, I would say, yes, it certainly does make sense. I would say this is a very... this movie kind of strives away from a lot of the stuff that Quentin has established that he does as a filmmaker.
We were pissed after Sukiyaki Western Django.
Well, luckily he didn't make that.
Right, but the fact that he had anything to do with it,
yeah.
Yeah,
well, that whole thing is bad by itself. But, you know, some of the things that, you know, Quentin always does that, you know, to a part, sort of drove me crazy after a while because everyone kind of adapted his style after Pulp Fiction was so successful, is every movie he does has, like, crazy pulp culture references that just get more and more diluted. I remember when he directed that CSI episode, which, by the way, was a fantastic episode. I remember in the beginning they were talking about, like, chutes and ladders or something like that. And it had nothing to do with anything. And it was just one of those one more annoying pop culture reference.
Yeah.
And I got so sick and tired of it. And I thought for a while, like, is this all he can really write?
Yeah.
You know, it's like his battle scene in Kill Bill, you know, up to this point is amazing. And then he's like, and then Uma's like, you know, or I'm sorry, Lucy Liu's like, silly rabbit. Tricks are for kids.
Yeah.
That's what they say before they fight. It's like, really?
Yeah.
Like, that's what they, you know, they say. And the fact that he wrote a movie that had no pop culture references,
mm-hmm.
that had people that very much seemed like they were of the time.
Yeah.
That had people that, you know, I thought were very, all very different. No, and the Nazis weren't just a caricature. I say a big part of that is, you know, the performance by Christoph Waltz, who plays the main Nazi, Hans Landa, is spectacular.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh my gosh.
But, you know, once again, sort of like when you say, you know, how good the Joker was, how good Heath was in The Dark Knight, a big part of that too was just how well it was written. And
yeah.
This movie is written really, really well. And I also think it's probably one of the best roles I've seen Brad Pitt do in a long time too. Granted, I haven't seen Benjamin Button, so that, you know, that in a way, you know, takes away from that, but I think that really,
yeah, but the whole
fantastic.
Thing, getting him back to comedy in a way, like, I mean, it's so funny. It's a Holocaust comedy, you know?
Well, you know, it's a perfect thing for Brad Pitt because he can play, not only can he play funny, but he can have that southern accent that mm-hmm. he already has because he's from Missouri, and he can play that kind of, like, ballsy guy like he
Missouri
did.
Or Tennessee?
He's from Missouri, I believe.
He's from Missouri, okay.
And I think it was Quentin was born
Quentin's
in Tennessee.
Quentin's from Tennessee, okay.
But, you know, also, you know, not only does he have the southern funny thing, but he can also play like a more of a Tyler Durden character, which is this
yeah.
kind of badass, funny guy who did what he wanted to
yes.
do. And, you know, and as Lieutenant Aldo Raine, he was just spectacular. You know, everything from his insanely awesome accent you know, which, by the way, there's this one scene where he has to pretend to speak Italian, which
Buongiorno.
Might be one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, my God.
And I got to say, you know, it's moments like that that make me think Brad Pitt is a genius.
Yeah.
I'm like, wait a second, he's unbelievable. And I think it, you know, just goes to show how great Quentin is as a director. But, you know, the movie itself, one of the big things that Quentin likes to do is, like, he likes to have violence out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Like, there's it's almost like a horror movie. Like, there's these moments where you don't expect violence, and all of a sudden, bang, you know, perfect example, Pulp Fiction in the car when they're talking to the guy, and then Travolta blows his brains out.
Yeah.
Same thing happened in Jackie Brown. This stuff happens a lot. With this movie, he held back so much.
Yeah.
And a lot of things were like these long, kind of really tense-filled conversations that
yeah.
you knew were going to end up in violence. But you, like, you know, you didn't know what was going to happen. And it just
and sometimes
and
they
got
didn't.
Tense. Yeah. And when it happened, it's like the violence made sense and it wasn't masturbatorial.
Yeah.
And it was just really great. I mean,
yeah.
I'm really impressed by him in every way. You know, we knew he could write a movie.
Well, the real irony of it is that the Holocaust was a time of unexpected random unexpected violence at every turn. And
yeah.
it's like, that's the irony of the whole thing. Like, he was so restrained, more so than the Holocaust.
Yeah,
you know? Like,
totally.
It's crazy. And yet it was so perfect and just, oh, I'm so impressed with him. And I'm so worried that the next thing he does is going to make us forget, mm-hmm. you know, forgetting Glorious Bastards. But, like, oh, everyone he picked was perfect. I still hold that, you know, there are some big Jews in Hollywood that
yeah.
I forgot. Ron Perlman.
Yeah.
Goldberg.
That's true. There are some gigantic Jews that didn't make it in. Luckily, they had Eli Roth playing the bear Jew.
And one of the best lines of all time
yeah.
is the bear Jew is not a golem.
Yes.
Which, you know, it was said in
yeah.
German, but
it's so funny.
But the subtitle, when you read the subtitle, the bear Jew is not a golem.
Yeah.
Oh my golly.
Well, I have two things to say about that. The first thing, yeah, that was funny. The first thing is that it almost felt like watching a foreign film. Because
yeah.
so much of the movie was done in German and French and also a little bit of Italian.
Yeah,
and it was
yeah, practically nothing in English.
Yeah, English was like
I was not expecting
was
all
the
those
least
subtitles.
Spoken language, and it was done so well, and it made so much sense. You know, it kind of gets, you know, we've had so many movies in the past where they have, like, you know, Nazis, and they're all speaking English, and everyone's speaking English, and you sort of, like, you know, they get away with it because that's what people expected, but it's nice to have a movie you know, I would say something like Passion of the Christ, which they did some the same kind of thing where they had, you know, everything was in a foreign language. And that's practically what this movie did, though this movie is, you know, far, far better than something like Passion of the Christ. And also with Eli Roth, I have to say, you know, when I first heard he was cast for this, I was like, what? I was like, yeah. The guy who directed Hostel? You know, granted, I thought that, you know, for Grindhouse, he had directed the best of the little trailers in the middle. He did Thanksgiving, which I thought was by far the best thing. But I gotta say, I was really impressed with Eli Roth. I thought he was really funny and really perfect for the role.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad, because at first I was just kind of like, is this Quentin just giving roles to people he likes? And he was great. I mean, the bear Jew was one of the funniest parts in it. And especially because, you know, he was the one that all the Nazis were talking about. And yeah, Eli Roth I thought was fantastic. So good for you.
And it's, yeah.
And maybe you should stick to acting a little more than directing, to be perfectly honest.
You know, yeah, I mean, it's like you said, you know, maybe he should, if he's sticking to directing, he seems to do a little better with shorts, you know, like the fake preview for Thanksgiving Day. Yeah.
And, you know, maybe if he gets out of the horror porn genre, maybe he'd be a better director. I don't really know. But most of his movies have been in that genre. But yeah, I thought he was great in that.
Let's talk a little bit about the DVD, unless you have some more to say about the movie. I think our main review of the movie is that everyone in it was amazing.
Yeah.
The one who played Stiglitz.
The guy who
looks like Aaron Eckhart.
Yeah,
he looks just like Aaron Eckhart. You know, could be his, you know, his foreign twin.
Who apparently starred in Uwe Boll's Far Cry. So if you got Netflix, you can check that out.
But he was incredible.
He was great. And, you know, he was that character. He was, you know, there's always that one crazy character in any war movie or any Quentin Tarantino movie. And they had this great montage of him murdering Gestapo officers. And I think my favorite was when he put a pillow over someone's face and then stabbed the pillow.
Yeah.
It wasn't that he was going to smother him. He was going to stab him to death with a bayonet. And, you know, it was really funny, the scene where the bastards go into this German jail to see if they can recruit him, where they basically say, you know, we're huge fans of your work.
Yeah,
you know,
it was great.
It's really funny. And yeah, I have to say that Quentin, you made me remember why I loved you in the first place, and you're fantastic. And I'm sorry if I said anything bad about Grindhouse, because this is really what you needed to do.
Oddly enough, I don't think we really said much bad about Grindhouse. We were some of the
more
few
positive than anyone else, right? Yeah,
but mostly because we appreciated what they were going for.
Yeah, and I thought Diane Kruger was good.
Yes,
she's only been a few things I've seen, like Troy, and I thought she was very good. And, you know, even, you know, BJ Novak, who was only in for a scene, was funny.
Yeah.
You know, it had a lot of good parts, but honestly, I mean, Christoph Waltz is like the bright shining star of this. I mean,
he's the breakout in a way.
He's the thing about his character that he is so charismatic, but so insanely scary. And, you know, this is unfounded in film, but the way he did it, it's like you never like him. That's not one of those things. You never like him, but you're always terrified for anyone he's talking to, because he feels like he's sort of like, for lack of a better term, the Sherlock Holmes of, like, Nazi Jew detectors.
Well it's funny because, I mean, not exactly funny, but again, in the writing of it, you know, Quentin wrote this character that was especially scary because he had no loyalty to anyone. He wasn't even loyal to the Nazis, you know, that he was working for. He was loyal to whoever side happened to, you know, grab him and put him on their side.
Yeah, he was a total merc. Yeah, he was a total mercenary. And I also like the fact that
so much more scary.
Yeah, there were a lot of real-life people in this, too, like real-life representations of people, like, you know, like Goebbels, who was, you know, Hitler's number two guy, obviously Hitler himself, and a lot of people in the Third Reich were actually characters in this, which I thought, you know, was good that it wasn't just, like, a fictional Nazi
but at the same time, they didn't feel a need to stay with what, you know, with history, because it's a fairy tale, you know, a murderous, massacring fairy tale.
Yeah, you're totally right. And I think it was a perfect balance of everything. And
let's talk about the DVD, though. Yeah.
One of the things that I thought was actually the funniest thing on the DVD is they have the full feature of Nation's Pride, which was the movie that they were playing, you know, during the end sequence of the movie. And and they actually, you know, I guess Eli Roth had directed this, and he spent 2 days shooting, you know, about, I think it's about 9 minutes altogether. I'm not totally sure.
Yes.
But it's funny because in the movie itself, it's really funny just how ridiculous the concept of the movie is, which is this sniper who's shooting people for like 3 days. But in the movie itself, it even gets funnier because literally it's like the guy aims, fires, and then cut to a guy falling off. And then he goes and shoots someone else. Mm-hmm. And it's literally just that, along with, you know, like, funny things like, you know, him, you know, wiping away all the bullet shells in his little clock tower so he can, you know, carve out a Nazi insignia. And it's really very much in the vein of the propaganda that was coming out at the time.
Absolutely.
And it's really funny. And I would say, you know, that in itself was the best feature on the DVD.
Yeah. And then this was the DVD because we actually weren't able to get the Blu-ray. But I don't know how much more would even be on that.
Much more, yeah. And other than that, there were some like alternative, you know, alternate extended scenes. And, you know, I wouldn't say they're great, but it was nice to have them.
Well, it's funny because most of the extended or deleted scenes were ones that were with subtitles anyway. And it's like, oh my God, so many subtitles. I just have a little trouble like keeping up with subtitles. Like I just don't read.
Yeah,
that I can't read it that quickly. Yeah, you know, yeah. I just
anime's illiterate. You know, I'm totally happen. You know,
stop making fun of the illiterate
people.
I
never learned how to read.
I can't read quickly enough to keep up with it. Yeah. So yeah,
I understand. You know, one of the really funny things is the very first one. You know, it's like a daily basically, and you hear Quentin Tarantino giving direction to the girl who plays Shoshana. And I thought it was really cool, A, just to hear Quentin Tarantino, and B, you know, you get the sense that, you know, he is good at telling his actors what he wants, mm-hmm. which a lot of directors aren't very good at. And so I thought that it was fun to have it that way. And, you know, the scenes themselves, they're nice to have, but definitely the movie is just a gem and totally fantastic.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, I have all these notes. I could spend the entire show talking about this movie and how good it was. But I would say if you're into classic cinema, particularly Sergio Leone type kind of longer paced dramas plus action, totally great. Totally great. Did that make any sense? I don't know.
I have no idea.
Well, I mostly say that because the opening scene, which was, you know, was probably the most patient scene Quentin's ever directed.
In his entire life.
Really reminded me of, I believe it's For a Few Dollars More. It was one of the three Man with No Name movies from the trilogy. And I believe it was For a Few Dollars More. And it was great. Totally great. So we should move on, though, probably, right?
Yeah, let's, got to actually move on to our next break.
All right, let's do it.
So we're going to take a really quick break, and we will be back with you in just a moment.